Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, love doctor, best-selling author, and speaker, Anil Gupta.
Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Alex Jolt. I am Mark Leger, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
We are going to be talking about relationships. We hear talk about relationships on occasion, and it's usually very specific, or maybe even all the time, I don't know, but it's very specific. And this is actually, in a sense, very specific in that we're going to be talking about most common mistakes people make in relationships. But knowing our guest, he's going to expand the conversation and give us things to think about that people don't normally think about. And it's funny that when talking about or listening to somebody talk about relationships, I have literally heard somebody say, well, I am not in a relationship, so I don't have to worry about that, or those things don't apply to me, or I haven't experienced that. Well, it's interesting that I personally think everyone I know is in relationship. Not everyone I know thinks they are in relationship, obviously, but a relationship isn't to me, and then we'll see how our guest feels about this, isn't to me just the relationship between a person and their romantic partner or wife or husband or lover. It to me, there's the relationship that people have with their family. There's the relationship they have with their work. There's the relationship they have with their fellow employees, the relationship with their boss, their relationship with their colleagues. There are so many. And then there's a relationship with money, the relationship with food, the relationship with our bodies. What about the relationship with our neighbors? And that's not even to mention the relationship with ourselves. And of course, there's the relationship with a romantic partner, or wife, or husband. But when we talk about most common mistakes people make in a relationship, I wonder if we are going to be able to expand that conversation. Interestingly, when Dorothy came along into my life, she shared with me in her teachings how she thinks most people are not in relationships. She actually thinks most people are in reactionships, where they're reacting to each other, pushing trigger points, and they react to each other kind of thing. And I, there's something I don't like to say, but I do say, I actually think most people are in transactionships, wherein I want this from that person and I'm willing to give this. And interestingly enough, that might seem okay if we're at the bank or at the grocery store, but I wonder if we looked at those transactionships, if we actually looked at them as relationships, what would make the difference? So I am excited about learning more tonight and expanding this conversation on relationships.
You know, hearing that word, I was thinking about the fact that we hear some of these words and we use them so in such a, you know, common everyday, you know, exchanges, but yet sometimes we grow away from the meaning or the definition because of our, you know, associations with it or our programming.
Good point.
So I pop back to the definition, and I think it's helpful to apply to everything you just said, which is a relationship is the way two or more people are connected, or the way they behave toward each other.
Ah, even the person at the bank?
Indeed.
Maybe even especially.
Often starting with the person at the bank.
What about the person who's a telemarketer on the phone?
Them too. You can have a very short relationship with them.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So here we are. So this is exciting. Actually, our guest has been on the show before. The last time we talked about happiness, and I would suggest that you all go check out that show. I believe it was show number 528. Very, very good show. And this one is our episode 826. And we're featuring the Love Doctor. He's a speaker and best-selling author of Immediate Happiness. Welcome, Anil Gupta, to the Life Changes Show again.
Thank you. And, you know, you've hit it on the head. Relationships are everything. You know, the two most important things in life are your health and your relationships.
Ah.
And no one teaches us how to have one.
Ah. Thank you for being here. Tell us more.
Yeah. So, you know, why do relationships fail? I'll tell you, and, you know, people are going to get a big insight today. Relationships fail because people say yes to a relationship until it becomes a no. So they'll meet someone, they'll talk to them, they'll talk to them for hours, and they think, oh my gosh, she's the one, he's the one, we have chemistry. And then, you know, they have a few drinks, something happens, and then all of a sudden they're in a relationship, but they really don't know each other. They're taking each other's word for whatever they've said. So they haven't done their due diligence on the other person. So, you know, they get into the relationship, then they start finding out stuff. And then they think, well, you know, let's see how this goes. Yeah, you know, at least I'm in one. But they really, and then they get comfortable, then they think, well, you know, maybe this is the best I can do. It's not too bad. But the secret is you say no until it's a yes. You collect the data. So if you're buying a house, you would spend time getting the data, the location, the appraisal, the inspections, the valuation, the mortgage, schools, neighbors, all that stuff. And you do your due diligence. But people don't in a relationship. And if they did that and they used the formula, the three-way deal breaker formula, they would have a 95% success rate. My daughter used this formula. First boyfriend she married using the formula. And it just takes away all the emotion because people get emotional. They get, oh, I'm in love and this is beautiful and I've dreamt of this. No, don't do that. It's a science and it's an art. But if you have the formula, you can take all the guesswork away.
Mm. Okay, so you mentioned your daughter, which brings us to the fundamental, the first place actually that a child experience relationship. And they see their parents and they also relate to them or see themselves in them, right? So tell us about the family component.
So when a baby's born, it has relationships with maybe 50 people, maybe 100 people, with uncles, aunts, nephews, sisters, brothers, doctors, dentists, pediatricians, you know, all sorts of people. And what's the most important thing when a baby is born is pure love, isn't it? It can do no wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start to go to school. And then they have to start performing. You know, if they break something, they get told off. If they do something wrong, they get told off. Previously, that was never the case. So then they have to start thinking, oh, I've got to do something in order to get my love for my parents.
Oh.
And it becomes transactional.
Wow.
It makes sense, doesn't it?
Wow, yes.
And when people date, they serve each other. They're really focused on providing the best service to their partner. Then they get engaged, they get married, then they say to themselves, whew, I don't have to do that anymore. And the man says to the woman, well, you're not the woman I married. The woman I married used to do this. Well, you're not the man I married. The man I married used to do this. But he said, well, I don't have to do that anymore. Well, I don't have to do that anymore. Then it becomes tit-a-tat, transactional.
Mm.
Instead of 100-100, it becomes 50-50.
100, 100. I like that.
If
Nobody I know that talks about that. Please
you
tell
make your
us.
partner, sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you.
No, I please tell us about the 100, 100.
If you make your partner your number one priority and they make you their number one priority, they'll never leave you. Never leave you. And you will never think of leaving them. And, you know, with my daughter, there's not a chance they will split up. Not a chance. How many people can say that? You know, when people get married, they live on hopium. I hope this works. I hope this lasts. They don't know. It's guesswork. They've had 10 relationships. They think, oh, this must be the one. They don't know. They said that with the ninth one. They said that with the eighth one. They said that with the seventh one. But using a formula, it takes away all the guesswork.
So I have a feeling we're going to get to the formula. In the meantime, let's define love within a relationship.
Yeah. So when you change the definition of anything, you change your life. So the definition of love is very simple. It's love is acceptance. When a baby's born, you accept it as it is. There's no judgment, there's no criticism, there's no telling it off, there's no expectations, there's no attachments, there's no stories, there's no drama, there's no trauma. Nothing. It's pure love, pure acceptance. It pees on you, poops on you, and you, oh my God, it's so beautiful. And it's pure. And how would that be if the world remained that way? It would be a totally different place.
Is that realistic, though? Maybe not the world, but how do we expand that from that love for baby into actual adult relationships?
Yeah. So it's really around expectations. Now, once you have expectations around how a person behaves and shows up, that will lead to upsets. So when a child is, you know, growing up, you can teach the child to be worthy, that they don't have to do anything to be worthy. They don't have to do anything to be loved. They don't have to do anything to receive love. But we never taught this. It becomes very transactional and it's goal-orientated. Oh, if I do this, I'll get that. If I'm naughty, I get attention. If I'm naughty, I get love. If I perform, I get my parents' attention. I get affirmations. I get kudos. But we're never taught this. And it's so painful growing up because all of a sudden you think, holy moly, I've got to do something. I've got to be funny. I've got to be a prankster. I've got to get attention. I've got to excel. I've got to be an athlete. Got to keep quiet, whatever it is. And it goes up in, and it stays with you for many years, you know, even in relationships, because we get triggered. We live in the past.
So
But if you use the formula,
the most important relationship in a child's life, those 50 people, I 100 people actually sounds like a lot of people, but even if it's 100, all of a sudden, potentially a large percentage of them are looking at the child to do something, be something, or act a certain way. So how do parents especially manage to that, knowing this, that helping them with that part of their transition?
okay. So there are four people in a child's life who do not behave that way. Do you know who they are?
I'm going to assume grandparents.
Yep. The grandparents unconditionally love their kids, grandkids. They adore them, love them, play with them, have fun with them, let them do stuff, give them freedom. No expectations, no chastisement, no telling off. That's why when I ask people, what's the saddest day of your life? Always, always, always is the death of a grandparent. They don't have to do anything to receive love.
So the parents have a responsibility to raise a child. So how do they raise the child and teach them and guide them and let them know that, how do you say, you don't have to do anything I tell you, I'll still love you?
Yeah, so it's I call it the AIM principle, always improving myself. And it's really important that parents behave in a certain way. And at the moment, they're behaving badly, and I'll tell you what happens. So mostly in the world I live in, I work with very successful people, but they've been through tremendous adversity. And they've been suicidal, they've lost their house, their business, things have happened. And as they grew up, they overcame that adversity. But when they have children, what they say to themselves is this: I don't want, or we don't want our kids to go through the adversity we went through. And they make it easy for the kids. So nowadays, you'll see kids are entitled and enabled. The greatest gift you can give your children is this: give them the ability to handle life by throwing adversity at them that they can reasonably handle. And that's what happens in nature. Now you go to Asia and you see 3, 4-year-olds crossing main streets because they have a higher level of awareness. They're far more street savvy because they have to be. Here, the kids are so protected, so enabled, so entitled. They just don't know how to handle situations. You know, when my daughter was 18, we sent her around the world by herself. Same with my son. When they were, I think, 8 and 10, we took them into the London Underground and told them to get home by themselves. But we prepped them up beforehand so that it wasn't a big thing. But if we hadn't coached them, guided them, nurtured them, always improving myself and them, it would have been difficult.
Does this come from, I don't know which came first, because you had your life traumas and dramas and that, so you mentioned suicide, people going through suicide, so you overcame that. What was that, before or after you had kids, and how did you overcome that?
It was November 2008. My kids were 17 and 15 at the time, and you know, I had to tell my wife, "Honey, something really bad has happened." She said, "What's going on?" I said, "I've lost, you know, all our the house, the car, the money in the bank, the student, you know, the kids' college fund." And she looked up at me and she smiled, and I thought, "What's wrong with you?" And then she said this to me: "Anil, I knew something was wrong because you've been behaving very strangely." And I thought it was something serious. I thought, "What is wrong with you? This is serious. There is nothing more serious than this," because I was fixated on money at that time. She said, "Honey, I thought you were dying. I thought you had cancer. I don't care about the money." I was shocked, shocked. But I thought that's what you wanted. And she said, "Honey, when did I ever ask you for money?" You see, ladies and gentlemen, if you're in a relationship, ask your partner what is it they want. And you'll be shocked to realize they don't want money. They want your time. They want your love. They want you to be present. And when you do that, the money will come. And if it doesn't matter.
Which part of it led you to be suicidal? Was it before that conversation or after?
Yeah, you know, I'd lost everything on the stock market, real estate. I was an overachiever, so I lost everything before everyone else. And you know, I thought, what's the point? You know, I have nothing left. That, you know, my family would be better off without me. I'm a failure. But then something beautiful happened. She said, "Honey, go to sleep. It's okay." And then she said to me, "What do you love to do?" I said, "I love to coach." She said, "Why don't you do that?" I said, "What about the money?" She said, "Honey, if you love to coach, just do it. And from there, I started doing events, 5 people, 10, 20, 50, 100, 500, eventually 10,000 people. And what I did was this: I served people. I gave. In the moment you give authentically, all the pain and suffering disappeared. When you give authentically, all your pain and suffering will disappear. And that's what I did. And then I did something that I urge all of your listeners to do, which is this: be so amazing that you cannot be ignored. And if you are ignored, it doesn't matter, because how you show up will be this magnificent soul. The best version of you will show up. And people will always remember how you made them feel. There are two types of people on the planet: ones that make you happy when you enter a room, ones that make you happy when you leave a room. That's it. Really simple.
So what you just shared in that powerful story, and thank you for sharing it. It seems I have a list here under personal growth and relationships. You have how can people learn to communicate their needs and boundaries? So communicate their needs. Was that what you were doing in that conversation with your wife at that time?
It was she was communicating that to me. She said to me, "Honey, I don't, we don't, you," and she said, "you haven't lost everything. You still have me and the kids. We'll sleep in the streets if we have to, as long as we're with you." That's huge. That changed my life. When you have a partner like that, you're unstoppable, because nothing else matters.
Wow. So, would you say she has self-love in order to be able to give you that as well?
It's self-love, and also the capacity to be love. It's a being, not a doing. A lot of people do love, which is a transactional thing. But when you're being love, it's just like you being the candle for a million other candles. She was just being love. And that's what a baby is. It's just being love.
So, in the case where there is conflict, and for people that obviously don't have that kind of relation and that kind of love in their relationships, how does one resolve conflict within relationships?
That's a really great question. So, a lot of people that I help and guide, I ask them this question. I ask the men this question: What do women want? They say, "I don't know. Oh my God, I have no clue. I can't work it out." And I ask women, "What do men want?" And they inevitably say they want love, but no, it's not true. Men want to be respected. Women want to feel love. So, for men, don't fix your lady. They don't want to be fixed. Women want to feel safe. They want to feel secure. They want to feel understood. They want to feel listened to. They don't want to be fixed. They want you to be present. Maybe some words of affirmation, some gifts. Men want respect. They don't want to be criticized. They don't want you to close them down. They don't want to be compared. They don't want you to complain. They want words of affirmation. "Hey, Filippo, you're amazing. You're an amazing dad. You're an amazing brother. You're an amazing son. I'm so proud of you. Thank you for keeping us safe. Oh my God, those muscles are incredible. Thank you. Thank you." And then a little pat on the shoulder. Honestly, it makes a big difference. So, ladies, make your man feel respected. He'll do anything for you. Ladies, it's so important. Men, ask your partner this question: "What can I do to make you feel even more loved?" Then ask, "What else can I do? What else can I do? What else can I do?" And do it. And ladies, ask your man, "What can I do to make you feel more respected?" What else can I do? What else can I do? What else can I do? And just do it. You'll be shocked at how simple it is. I wish you would help around the house. I wish you would leave the toilet seat down. I wish you would clean up after you. Really, if I did that, you would feel more loved. Yes. You know, I'll give you an example. I would always leave the lid off the toothpaste tube. Back then, they used to have lids that screw off. I'd say, well, what's the point? I'm going to come back and I'm going to have to use the toothpaste again. What's the point? And then she said this to me, Filippo. Honey, every time you do that, I can't love you as much. And I thought, that's a bit extreme. Then I thought about it. And I thought, yeah, she's right. In that moment, she must get so frustrated and, you know, feeling, oh, he's not listening to me. I'm not understanding her feelings. And now I rejoice doing it. It's the same circumstance, but a different meaning.
Interesting. Fascinating. So much of what you're talking about sounds like potentially more traditional ways of meeting people, more traditional roles. How in this modern day at the moment with social media and dating sites and all that, how does this apply?
So you've got to collect the data. Okay, so imagine I have a profile on, you know, a dating site. Okay, and we'll role play. I'll be the lady, and you'd be the man. Okay, and on my profile, it's got I love dogs. Okay,
Okay.
so you be the man, and I'll be the lady. So just role play with me. Okay,
You
and
okay?
tell me whatever comes in your head. Hey, John. Do you like dogs?
Yes, very
Ah,
much.
what's your favorite dog?
Golden Retriever.
Ah, they're so beautiful, aren't they?
Yes, what about you?
You know, I love the Chihuahua. It's, you know, if you just listen to that word, Chihuahua, Chihuahua, it's so beautiful. It has a beautiful resonance around it.
Do you have one?
You know, I have two. Can I show you a photo?
Course.
Yeah, there you go. Do you have a photo of your golden retriever?
Don't have a golden retriever at the moment, but I'd love to have one.
Okay. Have you ever had one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What was its name?
Chino. But
Chino,
I'm
do you
kind
have
of feeling like I might enjoy having a Chihuahua.
one? There you go. And do you have a photo of Chino?
Yes.
Could you send it to me?
Absolutely.
How long would that take?
It's on my phone. I'll send it to you in a little bit.
Okay. So, end of role play. I was collecting data from you. I know that you love dogs. Okay, now. But the fact you said that, I didn't believe it until I got the data. Okay. If he'd have said, well, I don't have a dog, I don't have a photo of it. Or he said, I like big dogs. They're lying. And so always collect it. If they say to you, oh, I'm going through a divorce, to me, that means nothing. Have you started the divorce? How long is it going on for? Is it contentious? You know, is there any paperwork filed? It means nothing to me. Collect the data and don't be afraid to ask because this is too important.
So this is like you were saying earlier about buying a house, get the appraisal, the comps, and all of that kind of stuff. And
Yeah, everything. You know, if they say that they love dogs, find out if that's the truth. If they, you know, like doing walks or they like hiking, go for a hike and see if they get puffed out or if they complain. Then you know.
So I'm getting subtly and not so subtly that most common mistakes people make in relationships, like we've heard them, that they're not collecting the data, obviously, and they're saying yes, like they don't have a no, or they're not looking for that no, right? They're not giving 100%, or not willing to, or ready to, or maybe not loving themselves, right? Are these in the on the list?
Well, the thing is, the three way deal breaker is this: any partner that you choose must have one is integrity. Be their word. Make sure they do what they say they're going to do. You know, be honest, truthful, not complain about other people, not be vicious, not be complaining. You know, the second one, they have to be loving, not just to you, but to everyone, not transactional. And the third one, they have to be healthy, emotionally, physically, spiritually, mentally, and financially.
This is the
They're the
formula, right?
This is the formula. It's a three-way deal breaker test. Now, if someone is cheating on their partner and they want to be with you, that's a hell no. Because it's out of integrity, it's not loving, and it's not healthy. Yeah, why take that risk? Oh, I'm going to leave my husband. I'm going to leave my husband. No, you shouldn't be in that relationship. Full stop. And then when you say no to all of these other people, it allows you to say yes to someone that will fulfill that criteria. And then that's what my daughter did. And, you know, he's a 12 out of 10.
Yeah, as we're bringing this to the close, thank you for giving the formula. That's very powerful. As we're bringing this to a close, and you said something, the man who's in a relationship, etc. Well, then trust potentially was broken if the person takes it that way. How can or can trust ever be rebuilt?
It can be from a place of forgiveness.
Oh.
If, you know, forgiveness is the express pathway to freedom. The quality of your life is dependent upon the depth and authenticity of the forgiveness you extend to yourself and to others. You know, things happen, and if you're willing to forgive your partner and you feel that they're authentic, you know, we're human beings. You know, you have to assess the depth of that mistrust or dishonesty, and ask yourself, am I big enough to let this go, to forgive? Do I believe my partner is repentful and is really seeking forgiveness and is authentic? Things happen. We make mistakes. But the power of forgiveness is huge.
As we bring all of this together, as we bring our time here to a close, so much of what you shared relates to every relationship that we were talking about. The collecting data certainly can, the being like even at the bank, not to the same extent, but friendships for sure, friendships and family, right?
Everything, you know, be so amazing wherever you go. You know, I was at the bank the other day, and there was a big line, and there was a lady with a walking stick. So I got her a chair. I didn't have to do that, but I knew that that triggered me. And I said, how can I serve? You know, she's old and she's, you know, uncomfortable. What can I do? Then I just did it. You know, I wasn't seeking any congratulations or thank yous. It's just a muscle. And then people notice that, and you never know where that takes you. And you never know what other people are going through. Your vibrational energy starts to change. People will sense it.
And you also, in so doing, other people's vibration can change as well.
Yeah. When you perform an act of kindness, you receive endorphins. The person receiving the act of kindness receives endorphins. The person observing the act of kindness receives endorphins. The person sharing the act of kindness receives endorphins. The person receiving the sharing receives endorphins. So it goes a long way.
Well, we've received endorphins, and if you want to receive more endorphins, you can find Anil Gupta at Meet Anil, MeetAnil.com. You can also find him on Instagram at Anil Gupta. ANILGUPTA underscore love doctor. And now you know why. And that's doctor spelled out DOCTOR. There's also his TED talk there, The Happiness Formula, which is also very much worth following and listening to. Anil, thank you so much for sharing. I'm impressed, and yet at the same time, I know this hasn't come easy, and you're putting your life's work to great use and lessons.
No, thank you. You know, there's no greater gift than impacting someone else's life. And, you know, people are going through so much turmoil. By you just performing an act of kindness, you just being loving can make the difference that makes the difference. And you have it inside of you. Just don't worry what other people think. Just be the best version of you.
Having said that, one more question. This is a good time for so much going on in the world to practice all of this or any of this. And yet it's also maybe the hardest time too. So any advice for this moment?
I would say just do this one thing. Be so amazing you cannot be ignored. Ask yourself, how can I serve someone? How can I make my father and my mother know that I love them and I thank them, that I honor them? They're the source. How can I say to my wife how much she means to me? You know, she gave me two beautiful kids. She stood by me. I would give up my life for her. Just tell her, tell people that you love what they mean to you. Don't hold back. Life is too short. And then look at yourself in the mirror and remind yourself, you're a miracle. Even before you were born, people were rejoicing at the announcement of your pregnancy. They remember you are loved.
Thank you for that. Beautifully said. If you want to meet Anil, meetanil.com, and then find him on Instagram. We have his links at the Life Changers Show, even one for a happiness score, which you can find out about. Go to the Life Changers Show and look up Anil Gupta. Anil, thank you so much. All the best to you.
Thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity to share. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Our pleasure. Mark, I wanted to meet Anil after the first time we had him on, and now even more so.
Well, now that I know that he gives out endorphins, we'll definitely have to spend some time together.
You felt them. I know you did. We all did. We all felt them. And the conversation on relationship, I can't imagine something more important. I mean, there are so many important things right now. This is one of them.
Absolutely is one of them. I think, again, it's what we said at the beginning of the conversation, is that our relationships are everything, and everyone we come in contact with, and you know, it's not what we were brought up to believe relationships are, is just, you know, romantic or parental, but, you know, starting to really understand how you relate to the homeless person, the person that you're standing next to on the subway, or, you know, the person serving you at the fast food restaurant, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, or the lady at the bank, like he was saying.
Or the lady at the bank. Give more endorphins.
And now it's time for our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Tracy, and I need to pack for my next assignment, and I keep putting it off. This procrastination is not a new thing for me. My work calls for me to travel every few months to a new temporary location, and I do love my job. I just don't love packing for the move. Moving is not the only time I procrastinate. I have a habit of putting off many things until the last possible moment. How can I change this pattern of procrastination?
My dear Tracy, it sounds like you've got a lot going on with your work, and the travel aspect is something you enjoy, but the packing and preparation part is where the procrastination tends to kick in. I totally get that. Packing is often one of those tasks that can feel overwhelming, especially if it's repetitive or requires a lot of mental energy. When procrastination becomes a pattern, it's often tied to a combination of factors like perfectionism, fear of failure, feeling overwhelmed, or even just a general lack of motivation for tasks that feel like chores or things you'd rather not do. Given that this happens to you with a variety of tasks, it could help to address the underlying causes in a way that tackles not just the packing, but the broader pattern of procrastination. So let us first examine the fear or resistance behind the procrastination. What is it that makes you put off packing or other tasks? Are you feeling stressed about something else? Do you fear you might forget something or do it wrong? Sometimes unpacking what's behind the procrastination can help address the root cause. So let's examine the fear or resistance behind your procrastination. What is it that makes you put off packing or other tasks? Are you feeling stressed about something else? Do you fear you might forget something or do it wrong? Sometimes unpacking what's behind the procrastination can help address the root cause. Packing and other tasks can feel huge, but when you break them down, they become easier to approach. For example, you could list out everything you need to pack, divide it into categories, clothes, computer, toiletries, documents, etc. Set a small time frame for each category, like packing clothes for 15 minutes, then moving to one of the other categories or things you need to do. The idea is to take the pressure off by making each individual step feel small and doable. If the big picture feels daunting, focus on one piece at a time. Schedule small chunks of time where you focus only on packing for 20 to 30 minutes. Then take a break. By committing to a small specific window of time, you make it less likely that you'll avoid it entirely. It can also help if you were to choose the 2-minute rule. This one works for almost anything. If something will take 2 minutes or less, just do it now. It's easy to put off something that seems tedious, but it helps to remind yourself that the initial task can be quick and the mental load of procrastination can often be worse than the task itself. So if packing is a drag for you, let's find ways to make it more pleasant. Maybe put on a podcast or playlist you enjoy, or even reward yourself afterward with something you're excited about. The more you can link something that feels unpleasant to a positive feeling, the easier it becomes to start. And another helpful thing you can do is change your mindset around the task. It will be good for you to reframe your thinking by focusing on the positive aspects of what you're doing. Instead of seeing it as a hassle, remind yourself that packing is a step towards an exciting new location, new experiences, or something else you enjoy about your job. Another helpful thing you can do is have someone else to check in with you, even if they're just asking, "Did you finish packing?" can give you the nudge you need. This could help take the pressure off of self-motivation. It is totally normal to procrastinate on tasks you don't find thrilling, but it can be really rewarding when you can build a routine that feels manageable. I trust that some of these strategies resonate with you, and I look forward to hearing of your progress.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, don't procrastinate and write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And our performance guest this evening is a pianist. He's an arranger and he's a musicianary. Welcome, Alex Jolt, to the Life Changes Show.
Oh, thank you, Filippo and everyone. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. And this holiday, our producers, Mark, Dorothy, and I got to enjoy you performing live at the Old Town Music Hall. And we want to thank James Mole for connecting us afterwards to invite you on the show. So I didn't know you when I came to see you, but
you're everywhere.
Oh well, yeah. It's like Waldo. Where's Waldo? Where's Alan?
Well, as a matter of fact, you're in LA right now. Again.
Yeah, I am. I'm right next door. We might run into each other at the grocery store.
At NAMM, actually, maybe.
That's right. Well, no, that's neat that you guys were there. I did that concert with my friend Rob Richards. He's the theater organist at the El Capitan Theater in Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah, very nice. And your, well, we'll get into your music because your music is very varied. Let me ask you this. You started music as a kid, I imagine?
You know, I did. We didn't have much resources at the time, and I'll never forget this. Somebody had donated to my family a 3-manual Wurlitzer organ, and, you know, I was 6 years old at the time. My first grade teacher gave me free lessons because she taught keyboards. Initially, and I would hear the music at church and try to play with one finger the hymns. But, you know, I was very short then, and I still am short. I couldn't reach the pedals. So that's why I switched to the piano, you know.
Well, actually, were you here in America at the time?
Yes. Yeah. So my background is my parents, mom, dad, and my brother. They were born in Hungary, and then they came over, and then I was kind of like a surprise later.
Ah, in America.
Yes.
So you had some great story. I have Hungarian friends and very close. And so you had some great stories. It sounded just like some of the ones that I've experienced. But I imagine, do you speak Hungarian and the food and all of that? Are you still very cultural and traditional?
Yeah, you know, we didn't forget our heritage, but, you know, we're with the customs in America. And one of the heritage parts is making the Hungarian foods like the Hungarian goulash, the Hungarian chicken paprikash. And my parents did teach me the language. The funny thing behind that was when I was really little, I would mix up English and Hungarian in one sentence. So people thought I was still baby talking at like 4 or 5 years old. And I would go to my mom and say, you know, I'd be angry because why don't people understand what I'm saying? So the way my parents worked it out was my dad would speak in English and my mom would speak only in Hungarian. And then that went away. I start to understand that there's two languages going on.
Ah, interesting. I've never heard that. Now, some words, but you would mix it all up, huh?
Yeah, I would. I didn't at that time. I didn't realize that there were two different languages happening, and so that was the process to untangle the two languages.
That is very interesting. I wonder if that's also because of music. Like you do this now. Actually, you mix music styles. Come to think of it.
Well, that's a good point. I never thought of it that way, but yeah.
You're still doing it.
All mixed up.
and it works very nicely. Well, actually, let's hear something. So, before we hear it, so that's really important. Your whole family, as many immigrants feel, very grateful to be here. And in your case specifically, you had support, right? Getting here, your family.
Well, yeah, you know, it was my dad came first. He escaped in 1956 from the Hungarian Revolution, and it was churches that had brought him over. And he actually landed at first in California before he went to Michigan. And then he and my mom grew up in grade school, so they connected years later, maybe a couple decades later, and my mom came out in 1976.
Wow. Okay.
And my mom had adopted my brother when he was 5 or 6 years old. So she came with him he came with her at that time.
So obviously the love for Hungary and the love for America is bred in you, and you start to learn Hungarian music. I imagine we didn't talk about that, right? Did you?
Right. No. With the Hungarian music, you know, I grew up studying classical and jazz by college years, but I always gravitated toward some of the Hungarian music. I went to Hungary with my mom to visit my brother. At that time, he was stationed in the U.S. Army in Germany. And then we went to Hungary to visit my grandma. And when we stopped by the Franz Liszt Music Academy, and they had sheet music for sale. So I still have some of the classical works from the official Budapest edition. And it's just, that was really a start to some of my music early on.
Oh, beautiful country, by the way. I've had the pleasure to be there. Can't wait to go back. In the meantime, we are here. And so you not only took to patriotic music, you actually play it in museums and where else?
Yeah, presidential museums of both parties and theaters. And I one of the things I love to do is honor those who have served or are serving our country. And so I always put it in my church concerts too, maybe one piece. And recently we worked on a documentary about my mom's story, From Hungary to America. And so we've incorporated that into the concerts more too, just to show people her background. And many people have come afterwards to the table and go, I can relate to that. Either I came to the States this way, or my parents or my grandparents. And everyone comes with a thankful heart.
That's beautiful. And speaking of beautiful, we have chosen America the Beautiful. It's something that you play often. You might have even played it that night or something related. But nonetheless, this is actually from one of your albums, America, My Home. Anything you'd like to share about it before we hear it?
I love the fireworks that you can put in patriotic music. That really what it is, where you can make it big and bombastic. And I love the text to this song and just the reminder of our faith in it.
Wonderful. Well, here is Alex Jolt's America the Beautiful, pre-recorded here for the Life Changes Show. And there it is. Beautiful. Thank you, Alex. Alex Jolt. And I'm going to spell that for you if you're looking for him. A-L-E-X-Z-S-O-L-T. Now, Alex has cleverly made it easier for all of us to find him, all of you who want to, at pianocreations.com and Piano Creations, everything else, Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, etc. Just look up Piano Creations, all spelled out. So, Alex,
yes.
You mentioned before we played that piece how you liked the message in it, and you're all about message. But before we get into another big message that you or one of the many, let's talk about Dolly Parton for a moment.
Sure.
Tell us what happened there.
Well, it's one of those pinch yourself moments where did this really happen? And, you know, for the last 4.5 years, I've been working on this project called Alex Jolt at the Ivories. And it was stemmed out of concerts I've done in theaters about 15 years ago titled Music at the Ivories. And my whole goal with that was to do 8 or 9 different styles of music in one night. I guess so, not people wouldn't like the whole concert, you know, they would pick and choose what their favorites were. But in that, I never created an album for that. So I worked on my 19th album, and we started in 2020, but we ran into some problems because COVID was in that time frame. Wanted to record the orchestra in Prague. So a lot of it's arranged by David T. Clydesdale with the orchestrations. Then I did the other half of the album. And we finally, in August of 21, got to go to Prague and record the orchestra, did the background singers in Nashville and my piano in Nashville. But one of the songs for the pop genre, I thought, gosh, it would be sure nice to be able to do I Will Always Love You for the 50th anniversary of that song, because Dolly wrote that in 1974. And so I talked to her manager, who I've known, and someone who works with her for a number of years. And I've met her on 2 other occasions. And but Dolly, she wants to hear it first. So we recorded it, gave her a sample, and she called it, wow, this is a big production piece. Those are her words. And we were so happy to know that she was willing to record and do this. I say it's a duet, but it's also a trio. Once we finished out, she said, you know, Alex, you're a pianist, but because of the song, can we have that love story type feeling with a male vocalist? And then I come in and do my recitation in the middle. So for the second verse, we got Charles Billingsley, who's an amazing singer and vocalist. And so it takes you on a musical journey and tapestry with that song.
Nice. Well, and people can find that at all your links, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it's streaming. I will say this, if people were to order it at the website, we have a special limited edition signed photo of Dolly and myself from the photo shoot and the album as a special gift. So, yeah, it's just really neat. And the photo shoot was a lot of fun, too. Should I share that? Yeah, I'll share this. It was a little behind the scenes of the photo shoot where, you know, I was waiting for Dolly. Dolly walked in and I said, Dolly, this is like the best day of my life. And this is how humble she is. She turns to me and goes, oh, come on, Alex, it can't be the best day of your life. Surely you've had better days than this. And I thought, well, I'm not so sure about that.
That's great. That's great. Well, you certainly have had some special days for sure, because you have an organization that you support people, and you also are on a mission. As a matter of fact, you call what you do musicianary. So tell us about that and the food organization.
Yeah, you know, primarily what I do is church ministry, and I've been in over 2,500 churches around the world sharing the gospel. And, you know, my mission statement is simple: to encourage, uplift, change lives. And music has a way of doing that. With that, our mission segment is Food for the Hungry. And between Food for the Hungry and our prior mission focus with World Vision, we've been able to find sponsorships for about a little over 1,000 kids through a piano concert. 1,000 kids have gotten sponsored through a ministry event like that around the world. And it's really amazing because, we lose 27,000 kids per day. And that number was bigger a few years back, and we're getting better because of organizations like Food for the Hungry.
Wow.
But, the news doesn't report that. If I asked my audiences and congregations, did you hear that stat on the news yesterday? Did you hear it today? Do you think you'll hear it tomorrow? And everyone, nobody raises their hands because it's the untold story of these kids. So I always tell them, this is not a commercial. This is my heart and my passion. And I think about it, if my parents didn't come from Hungary, my face could easily be on one of these picture folders of these kids in need of sponsorship. So my life is radically different, and I try to help these kids and have their radical life change as well.
Thank you. Well, this is a beautiful moment to play a piece that you have shared with us. That's part of your praise music. So, anything you'd like to share about that before we play it?
Yeah, it's He Leadeth Me, and I've always let one foot in front of the other in a way, and I let God help guide me. And I've put this back into my concerts this year because I really feel it's God's leading that will open up an opportunity, whether it's a church, a museum, a theater, wherever I am, to allow me to share the music that God has given me.
Well, this is from his album Praise Him, Volume 3. And this is Alex Jolt, and He Leadeth Me. Pre-recorded, aired here on the Life Changes Show. Unless people have heard Alex Jolt before, I can't imagine that they have heard He Leadeth Me quite like that. So more power to you, Alex. I was all ready to say thank you and good night. And then I saw a little note here that said Batman Connection. What is that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a big 60s Batman fan, and one of the great things is some of the cast I was able to call friends. And a gang of us that I guess we're the Bat Pack, you could say that way,
Yeah.
but we've been able to be in full authentic costumes, and we were asked by Adam West to be there for his Hollywood Star Ceremony. And 4 years ago, I was dressed as Robin for Burt Ward's Hollywood Star Ceremony at his request. And it's just, been a lot of fun. So we're, there's Trekkies, we're called baddies.
I've never heard of that, and I guess it's something I needed to know. And not as a pianist, you mean just in costume?
Yeah, in costume, although word got out, and so churches would bring me in for youth events and also for men and women's ministry things, and we'd get like pictures done and do a whole presentation thing too. So yeah, you never know where Robin might be, you know.
Very funny. How fun. Okay, well, thank you for sharing that. Well, all the best to you again. pianocreations.com, and then of course Facebook, Instagram, all the socials, Piano Creations, and you'll find Alex Jolt there. Thank you so much, Alex. What a pleasure to connect with you here on the show in this way.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for everyone who's been listening tonight.
All the best to your concerts and your ministry. And again, another big thank you to Alex Jolt, and another big thank you to our interview guest, Anil Gupta. And with that, that is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeune, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.